I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we've got a crazy story for you out of Island County, Washington, where a Republican election observer has been charged with a felony after refusing to wear a mask in a ballot counting room.
I get a little emotional because I'm really worried. But our forefathers didn't give up. And this is crap.
There's a lot to unpack with this story, but the kicker is that the prosecutor who's charged him with that felony has a long history of unhinged posts about Republicans and Donald Trump. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you are worried about lawfare in this country, specifically politically motivated lawfare, we have the story for you today. It's actually a follow-up to a story that we first told you about a few days before the November election. And it takes us to Island County, Washington. So you might recall, end of October, as ballot counting was in full swing in Washington state, there was a female Republican election observer who came in to do her duty to make sure that nothing hinky was going on, but she was not wearing a mask. And the auditor in Island County, Washington, had put out a requirement, again, this is October of 2024, long after COVID, that if you were going to be in the ballot counting room, you had to be wearing a mask. And so that election observer at the time, a few days before the election, was escorted out by the police. Here's that video.
Well, I'm sorry you have to come to this.
Okay, I am too.
Okay, but I have to take a stand for people.
Okay. Well, you've been asked to leave. I appreciate you leaving on your own accord.
Well, I'm not leaving on my own accord here. You guys are escorting me out.
Okay, here we go.
That is not leaving on my own accord here.
All right. Have a good day.
So she was escorted out because she didn't have a mask on. And she thought, well, why do I have to wear a mask? We're years out of COVID-19. But that was the rule that the Island County auditor had put down. So the then chair of the Island County Republican Party, a man named Tim Hazelow, did not like this. And he wanted to push back against this rule in court and essentially believed it was unconstitutional, that it was completely arbitrary. So a few days after that woman was escorted out, Tim Hazelow went, as he had planned to do anyway, to go observe ballot counting in that same office. And he went without a mask on, knowing that that rule was in place, but wanting to see if they had any sort of basis, legally speaking, to actually be able to remove him from the room. So here is the body camera footage worn by the police officers who were called in to remove Tim Hazelow from the room a few days before the November election because he was not wearing a mask.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Miller?
What's your name?
Tim Hazelow.
Tim Hazelow?
Yeah, okay. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've met before.
So tell me what's going on here.
I'm just observing my civil rights as the observer.
Okay, but as I know, they've made a policy that you wear a mask while you're in
there. Which the RCW doesn't give them the authority to do so.
That's still a policy that's been set. And they've made that very clear to you.
Are you guys going to cite me for being here?
I'm going to ask you to leave.
I'm going to sit here and watch the balloting.
Then I'm going to insist that you leave.
I'm going to sit here and watch the balloting.
No, you're not. Okay? You need to leave.
Are you going to write me a citation?
If I need to,
then
let's go.
I'm the chairman of the party. Not only am I authorized because of the First Amendment and because I'm supposed to be here to exercise my rights, I'm also obligated to observe based on my position. So I'm obligated.
You've been given the opportunity to observe, and you're not following the policies of that set by the auditor. The charge is disorderly conduct.
Gotcha.
Okay, you have a mandatory court appearance.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions for
me? No.
I'm going to ask you not to return here today.
I won't.
Or you can end up in jail.
I won't. Okay. Should I go sign out, though?
What's that?
Because I have to sign in as an observer. Should I sign out?
I will escort you up there to sign out,
okay.
and then you can be on
the
way.
No, that makes sense. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep. I appreciate what you're doing. I'm not trying to be a dick or anything.
I get it. I get it.
So gets cited for disorderly conduct. And I've watched at length the body camera footage. I thought he was respectful throughout the interaction, but firm that he did not believe that they had a right to set a masking policy in order for him to, as part of our wonderful, transparent democratic process, do his duty to sit there and watch ballots be counted. Now, he said something at that end of that video that I want to put a pin in, and I want you to remember, where he asked the officer who cited him for disorderly conduct, a misdemeanor, if he should go back in and sign out, because he had to sign in order to do this ballot counting. So I want you to keep that in mind. So that happened again a few months ago. We hadn't heard anything about it. He had a court date for a misdemeanor charge of disorderly conduct, but he really felt like he actually needed to be cited in order to build the case and push back, legally speaking, against this masking requirement. So then a couple days ago, this happened. And it blew our minds. This is from the Whidbey News Times, which broke this story. North Whidbey man charged with felony over refusal to wear mask in an elections office. Yeah, the charge has now been upgraded for Tim Hazelow for the crime that you just saw unfold to a felony. I want to read from this Whidbey News Times article for you. It says the former chairperson of the Island County Republican Party is now facing a felony charge in connection with his refusal to wear a mask in the county elections office last fall, according to court documents. Prosecutors charged 57-year-old Tim Hazelow, a North Whidbey resident, in Island County Superior Court with unauthorized access to a voting center, disorderly conduct, and criminal trespass in the first degree. Hazelow was originally charged in district court with a single count of disorderly conduct, misdemeanor. Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks said the district court case was dismissed when the Superior Court case was filed. Banks said he escalated the charges to include a felony count after negotiations with Hazelow and his attorney did not result in an agreement. Hazelow previously accused Banks of pursuing the case for political reasons. Banks ran as a Democrat, but now filed as having no party preference. Banks denies any political related bias and has repeatedly stressed the importance of ensuring the integrity of elections. Let's think about that for a second, shall we? So there's a few things here that have been happening behind the scenes that I want to clue you in on. So Tim Hazelow has provided us, we were able to view, an email sent to him by the elected prosecutor in Island County, Greg Banks. That email, essentially was sent to Tim Hazelow and his attorney, said, in so many words, if you do not plead guilty to the misdemeanor that you were cited for, we will take this to Superior Court and we will throw the book at you and we will charge you with a felony. I read the email and to me it came across as a threat. It was incredibly aggressive. I showed the email to several former prosecuting attorneys who said, you know, it's normal course to sort of wheel and deal and to try to get a case wrapped up before you have to go through some sort of trial by making an offer to them. But they said that this email was above and beyond anything they ever would have done as a prosecutor in the way that it was worded. It was like, you will, almost like you will save us the embarrassment by pleading guilty to this misdemeanor for not wearing a mask and having to be escorted out, or we will charge you with a felony. Well, Tim Hazelow said, kick rocks. And so what did the prosecuting attorney do? He dropped the district court case and he charged Tim Hazelow with a felony crime. Now, that little bit at the end where the elected prosecutor says he denies any political related bias. In fact, he says, well, I used to be a Democrat, but now I list no party preference. So this isn't political. This is all about the integrity of elections. Well, unfortunately for Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks, the internet exists. And just a couple years ago, there were multiple news stories on him because as an elected official, he was posting unhinged, insane stuff about Republicans and supporters of President Donald Trump. And again, the internet is forever, as they say. This is just from a couple years ago. He was posting comparing MAGA Republicans to Nazis, literally with a MAGA hat next to pictures of Klansmen. He was calling Trump supporters racist bullies with second grade intellects and behavioral disorders. He was suggesting that it would be okay if Republicans died of COVID, saying collateral damage is a bitch. He was saying that 38% of voters don't see anything wrong with white supremacy. Even after we flush Trump, we have a difficult job to cleanse society of their diseased thinking. Those are the social media posts of Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks, who wants us to believe that there is no political motivation in him personally and his office elevating the charges against Republican election observer Tim Hazelow to a felony crime. I don't even have to convince you that it's politically motivated, because anyone with a brain can see that it is. And when you learn the ins and outs of this case and the actual felony crime that the prosecutor has charged Tim Hazelow with, you'll understand that there is no merit to it whatsoever. But before we get to that and break it down, I'll talk to him about a little bit about it. Tim Hazelow himself is nice enough to join us on Undivided today to talk about this entire ordeal. Tim, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks, Brandy. It's great to be here, and I appreciate your time.
This is insane. This is insane. So there's so much to cover here. I mean, we know sort of the gist of what happened. So let me just start here. When you guys went back to go into the ballot room, I think it was on that Monday, knowing what had happened previously, knowing that if you weren't wearing a mask, they were going to have a problem with that. What was your expectation of what would happen to you, I guess?
Well, I guess the honest truth is we sent them a letter of, a letter of intent, trying to get them to stop doing this. And that was 3-4 days earlier in the week, of the last week, right before Friday, so like Wednesday. So we gave them a few days, and they didn't even give us the courtesy of responding to that letter. So I really didn't know what to expect at that time. Had they changed their mind? Had they not changed their mind? And I wasn't going there to disrupt anything. And anybody out there who knows me knows I'm not that kind of guy. But so I went in. I signed the document saying that I would obey the rules, all the written rules. None of them said mask on it, on the written rules. And I got my badge, and they gave me a mask, and I was like, oh, okay. So I put it around my wrist, so I guess technically I was wearing it, right? So I walked back in there, and I sat down, and I sat there quietly, and I learned a lot, actually. They were moving the ballots from electronic to paper so they could scan them. So I was listening to how they were doing it and the names they were calling out and things of that nature. So I learned quite a bit. And it took a good 10, maybe 12 minutes before Michelle even came back there to tell me to wear a mask.
Yeah.
So honestly, I thought, well, maybe it's an option now. And reality is I knew better, right? I knew that they wanted you to wear a mask. I just can't agree with it. And I don't think I was breaking a law. And that's why they couldn't write me a ticket for not wearing a mask, right? They had to come up with something else.
Yeah.
Because that's not against the law.
So in that moment, though, like you said, you knew that you were supposed to wear a mask. You knew it had been an issue, you know, several days prior. So what did you think would happen when there was that inevitable confrontation that you have to wear a mask or what?
Well, my hope was that they would quote an RCW that actually has some teeth, or a legislative law that says that they can make this rule. And in that case, I would have left or just put on a mask without a question if there was actually a law that said I had to do that. But there wasn't, and she couldn't provide any of that to me. So I just sat there until the sheriff came. And I guess it's disrespectful, and it's in today's world, it is disorderly conduct to question authority.
Yeah,
that's what it is. I was questioning the authority of a low-level politician, and now all of a sudden that's disorderly conduct, rather than standing up for your rights like our founding fathers and everybody before us has ever done, right?
Yeah, and we'll get into the charges and stuff, but were you arrested that day?
No.
So you weren't arrested. You were what, escorted out?
Yeah, I was escorted out, and I was given a citation, a misdemeanor citation for disorderly conduct.
And who escorted you out? What law enforcement entity?
It was an Island County sheriff. And the Coopville Marshal, who is also an Island County Sheriff, he double duty. So his jurisdiction, so he had to be there.
Yeah.
Both nice guys, by the way.
And you didn't resist. You didn't, you wanted them, like you, my understanding is you wanted them to actually be the ones, like you weren't going to leave on your own. They had to escort you out. Right.
They had to escort me out. And there had to be a reason. And that was what I think it was misconstrued in the paper that and maybe I stated it wrong, that I wanted a citation. What I said was, if I'm not doing something that's worthy of a citation, if you're not going to be able to give me a citation for what I'm doing, then I'd rather just sit here and exercise my First Amendment rights and observe, quietly observe the election. Everybody's just counting away. I'm sitting there quietly when they walk in. Nobody even notices I'm there. And so the only disruption was actually them coming in to take me out.
Yeah.
That was the only disruption in the entire day.
I also want to note, so there was a Como News story that was done the first time this scandal sort of erupted, where the auditor said you have to wear a mask and there was this disagreement about it. And I don't know if you saw the video, but Como News was invited in by the auditor to sort of get some video of the ballot room. And in the video, an elderly man is sitting in the room without a mask. During a news story,
counting ballots.
During a news story that was about how the auditor had put her foot down and people would have to wear a mask in there. Did you ever get an explanation as to why that individual didn't have to wear a mask, but why you would be escorted out for not wearing a mask?
Yeah, we were told that this individual was taking a drink, and that's why his mask was off. And yet, it wasn't on his face. It wasn't down around his chin. There was no drinks around him at all. And the video showed a good 15 or 20 seconds of him processing ballots. I'm sure there's more video, too, if the news would release it. I doubt if they will. But he's not the only one. So when I went in there the morning of the 4th, half the staff had their masks down below their noses. The one lady who seemed to be in charge of the whole thing, an elderly lady that was sitting up towards the, I would guess it would be the south side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
She had her mask down around her lips, and she was talking to another lady about how to do something. When you walk in the front door, you'll see in the videos that the front staff up in the front office aren't necessarily wearing masks. Their masks are off when they're on the phone. Their masks are off when they're talking to people coming in to vote. And so it was just a really loose deal that shouldn't have been there to begin with. You know what? Say we recommend that you wear masks.
Yep. And if you're uncomfortable, if you know you feel unsafe in this environment, if people aren't wearing masks, maybe this isn't the environment for you to be in, and you can make that choice. You get the citation. When do you, what is the expectation? Did you get a summons to court? I mean, how, take us through the legal maneuvers following the citation that was handed to you.
So the citation was given to me, and on the citation, it's like a traffic ticket. The misdemeanor citation is like a traffic ticket, and it has a court date. So I show up at the court date, and of course there's 30 people there, right? It's an arraignment, and I'm sitting there, and I'm in a jacket, and I'm not saying anything bad about people, but it was, I look around and I'm the only one paying for an attorney, basically, is what's going on here. Yeah. Everybody else has public defenders. We'll just go with that. And I didn't have an attorney at that point in time, but I'm just saying that's what it looked like. So the judge reads the charge, reads what disorderly conduct actually is, and then asks for a couple minutes to review the citation because, you know, he did 30 people. He's doing it as he goes. And he looks over at the prosecutor and he says, I really don't think this rises to the occasion of disorderly conduct. And about that time, Greg Banks signs off the Zoom call and one of the underlings is there. I don't know what to call a lower attorney, so I'm not trying to be derogatory.
Deputy prosecutor, yeah.
Deputy prosecutor's there. And he says, oh, no. Well, Mr. Hazelow made a phone call. Mr. Hazelow threatened a poll worker. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And so the judge looked at me and he said something to the effect of, I can't hear your side of the story at this type of a hearing. All I can go by is what the prosecution says. And I suppose I find standing to move this forward.
Wow.
And asked me how I plead. And I said, well, I don't really have an attorney right now. And I didn't think this was going to go anywhere. So I didn't get an attorney. And it just kind of went like that. Then the next time I brought in an attorney, we pled innocent and filed for a motion for dismissal, which brings us to the letter that you and I are probably going to talk about here in a minute.
Let's just go there. So you are going to fight this, right? You're not going to plead guilty to this. You think this whole thing's ridiculous because it is ridiculous, right? So there is an email. You've shown me the email. And I have to say, I've never read anything quite like it. And this is, just so people know, this is the Island County elected prosecutor, Greg Banks. And before we even get to the letter, he took this case on himself?
Well, everything that comes from me, from the prosecutor, has his name on it and his signature on it. And he was actually on the Zoom call, zooming into the hearing when I was arraigned the first time. So all I can assume is that he's actually the prosecutor on this. There's no other prosecutors' names.
Yeah, and he's,
and
like,
so
you
why
said,
would a prosecutor, the highest level prosecutor in the county, be prosecuting the lowest level criminal case there possibly could be?
Yeah, we see that sometimes with high profile murder cases and things like that, where they want to step in. So I'll let you characterize the email, but to me it sounded kind of like a threat. Either you plead guilty to what we've charged you with, or we're going to up the ante and we're going to charge you with a felony. Is it fair to characterize it as a threat? Did you find it to be a threat?
So I got this on Thursday night, the night before the Washington State Republican Party meeting down in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And so I got it around 9 o'clock Thursday night. And I had to leave home at 4:30 in the morning to be at Vancouver, and I didn't sleep all night.
Wow.
It was devastating, because I read the letter and I was thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. So you can't win this in district court, obviously. And so this is, you're going to try to coerce me or blackmail me, I don't even know what to use, into admitting guilt so you can have your victory. And I don't know, we'll probably talk about motivations here in a minute, but it just seemed a little odd to me. And so I talked to a couple attorneys, and I think you said you had talked to one, and they said, yeah, this is kind of the wrangling, but this letter seemed pretty abrupt to me, pretty abrasive, not the normal, hey, if you do this, we'll do that type thing.
Yeah, I spoke to a former prosecutor who they found the letter to be particularly harsh in the way it was worded. So what did you do? Did you acquiesce?
No way. So I talked to my attorney, Austin, at 9 o'clock the next morning while I was driving to Vancouver, and I was quite flustered. And I was really tired. So I probably shouldn't even drive to Vancouver. But we talked about it, and I said, you know what, Austin, I'm not going to plead guilty to this stuff. I'm not going to plead guilty to something that shouldn't be charged with to begin with. And so send in the draft of dismissal anyway. And we did. And then a couple days later, I got an email saying that, yes, we're going to file a felony on you. And then today, like I said, I came home today, and there's the official summons to court on the 24th at Island County Superior Court. So
what is the felony charge?
The felony charge is RCW 29A.84.555. And I'll read it to you. It's really short.
Okay.
Any person who willfully and without authority accesses or assists another person or entity with unauthorized access to a voting center, election office, ballot counting area, ballot storage area, or any election system, or provides unauthorized access to another person or entity to a voting center, election office, ballot counting area, ballot storage area, or any election system, whether electronic or physical access, is guilty of a Class C felony punishable under another RCW that gives the punishments. So I'm thinking, man, I didn't do any of that.
That's not relevant to this case.
No. I mean, I signed in. I was given a badge. I was told where the counting was happening. I walked back there and sat down quietly and watched.
This is insane. I mean, that's not that clearly is meant to be unauthorized access. Now, they didn't want you there anymore, but they let you in. As you said, you've got a sign-in, you've got a badge. So it doesn't seem like there's any merit to the felony charge. Let's talk about the prosecutor, though, because in my mind, this is, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but to me, it's political. So this particular prosecutor has been in the news before. Greg Banks, for his, what I would characterize as unhinged rhetoric against Republicans, particularly against Donald Trump. He, a ton of posts that came to light. I'm reading from the Everett Herald. He called Trump supporters racist bullies with second grade intellects and behavioral disorders. He likened Trump supporters to members of the KKK. He clearly does not like Donald Trump. He clearly does not like Republicans. Do you believe that that's why he's going after you so aggressively?
You know, if I were to take the prosecution, the initial charge being charged in district court all by itself, I'd say, well, maybe he's just trying to uphold the law. If I were to take the letter all by itself without the initial charge, well, maybe he's just being aggressive because he thinks he's got a case. If I were to take the felony charge without the other charges, maybe he thinks he has some. But when you start adding all this together in one big lump sum, I can't tell you what his motivations are. I know that, and you know this as well as I do, but I'm kind of the de facto face of conservatism for Island County. I ran for Congress. I got more votes in the second congressional district than any Republican ever had. A pretty solid blue district. And I've been a Trump supporter since 16, and I'm not shy about it. You've seen my truck. You've seen my posts. So who knows? I can't say what his motivations are because I'm not in his head. And between you and me, that's a place I don't think I'd want to be anyway.
Well, I mean, in any reasonable person, you pull yourself back from the politics of it. The law you read to us is not a description of what happened that day. It's correct. Just not. I don't know how they could argue that in court. I don't know how a jury could find you guilty. So what's your plan from here? So you've got an attorney. You're going to fight this. You have to go to court. Also interesting, you've been told when you go to court, you have to be arrested and booked.
Correct, which is kind of odd to me. I didn't know that. I mean, I saw Trump get his mugshot.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll get a mugshot coffee cup or something made. I don't know. So I'm supposed to report ahead of my court date. It says here immediately before the trial, I have friends at the sheriff's office. So I'm going to call and find out if I can do it early because I got to take time off work every time I do something. I have to pay a lawyer every time I do something. So I think they're really just trying to spend me under the table. But yeah, so I got to go get booked, fingerprinted, and get my picture taken, I guess. I don't know if they're going to leave me in the courtroom in handcuffs. I don't know what's going to happen. I've never been there before.
Wow. I'm stunned by this. That's what I was going to ask you. Have you ever been charged with a felony before?
No. I had a fish and game ticket once back in like 2002.
Oh, criminal.
I'm a bad dude.
Like, look, clearly we're being lighthearted about it. I can tell that you're trying to. I mean, you've talked about being really freaked out before, but we're, you know, but that's a felony is no joke.
I mean, with my job, and you know what I do, I work for the Navy.
Yeah.
And I have a high clearance level. I work in an open secret facility. So if I lose my clearance for some reason, or even get suspected of doing things that are unworthy of somebody with a clearance, I mean, I don't even know how to use the terminology. That could be devastating. Mm-hmm. I mean, what am I going to do at 57 years old if I've been doing this for 30 some odd years? What am I going to do now?
So why not just say, okay, I'll just take the ticket. I'll just take the misdemeanor. I don't want to risk it. I don't want to roll the dice.
Well, because in the mid 1700s, our founding fathers didn't roll over. And in the mid 1800s, I get a little emotional because I'm really worried. But our forefathers didn't give up. And this is crap. I mean, there's nothing there. They shouldn't have had the rule to begin with. And if we don't stand up to these low-level politicians, all I did was ask questions and push back a little bit. There was no violence. There was no resistance. And so if we don't do this as a population, it's just going to get worse.
Man.
For all of us, not just me.
Well, I appreciate you being willing to stand up and push back against something that's clearly lawfare. It's clearly absurd. I do know that you're paying out of pocket for your own attorney. So I'm going to post a link to a little fundraising page to help you with the legal costs of that, a give, send, go. And we'll post that for folks. I'm glad you're fighting it. But, you know, again, I mean, it's not a joke. It's a joke in the sense that the charge is a joke, but what you're facing isn't. So, Tim, we're going to keep tracking this with you. I know there's some other things in the works around these masking rules. And so please keep us updated, okay?
Yeah, I will. I really appreciate it.
This is insane. So absolute lawfare at its worst. And there's a couple things that absolutely blatantly undermine the case against him. The first is that you'll recall back in October, after the first woman was escorted out of the Island County Elections Office for not wearing a mask, you'll recall that Como News went there and they did a story about it. And the Island County auditor, you know, let them in to get video of the whole location where they were counting ballots and all of this. And on that video, a couple days after, Republicans got to be escorted out for not wearing a mask, they showed a man on the video, it was just a small little short glimpse, counting ballots with no mask on. No mask in sight. Tim Haslow said he was later told, he was drinking. Do you see a drink anywhere? So how can they kick Tim Haslow out of that office and ultimately charge him with a felony if they are, and there's video evidence from Como News, and I'm sure if subpoena Como News, try to get their video footage, see if that man had any drink in the vicinity. Maybe, I don't know, he had his drink on the floor and he was just sipping, but he took his mask off and hid that too, and then took a sip of his drink. So clearly their masking rules were lax. And then the other issue is, as I said, and I'll just read again, I think it's really important that it is just, these are trumped up charges by a prosecutor who hates Trump supporters, but the RCW that the prosecutor has used to charge him with a felony, again, I'll read it in full. Any person who willfully and without authority accesses or assists another person or entity with unauthorized access to a voting center, election office, ballot counting area, ballot storage area, or any election system, or provides unauthorized access to another person, whether electronic or physical access, is guilty of a Class C felony. I would ask you again, Tim Hazelow, as is evidenced by the body camera footage, the procedures, if you're going to be an election observer, this is someone who signed in, got a badge, went into the room and was sitting there for a period of time before the police came again, and then asked the police, told him, hey, I got to sign out. Here's the video.
Should I go sign out, though?
What's that?
Because I have to sign in as an observer. Should I sign out?
I will escort you up there to sign out. Okay. And then you can be on
the way.
No,
that makes sense. Okay.
Okay. Oh. Thank you.
All right. Very well.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. Please don't come back.
Yeah.
Does that seem like someone who willfully, without authority, accessed an election office? He literally signed in. And then he literally signed out. Does that seem like someone who willfully, without authority, accessed an election office? Does that seem what that felony law is meant for? No, that's to punish someone with a Class C felony who breaks into an election office or who barges in and storms in. It's a serious charge. It is not relevant to what Tim Hazelow did, the crime of not wearing a mask in there and being told to leave. And that takes us back to the issue of Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks. We have emailed his office a number of questions about this case. Chief among them, of course, is should you not recuse yourself? Because the elected prosecutor has taken this case on personally. Yeah, if that doesn't... Because remember, he's got all of this lengthy history of posts comparing Republicans to the KKK, calling them racist bullies with second-grade intellects and behavioral disorders, saying that we need to cleanse society of their diseased thinking, saying if they died from COVID, collateral damage is a bitch. So, of course, we've asked his office. Given his documented history, I'll read from the email we sent. Given his documented history of troubling comments about Republicans and Trump supporters and the political underpinnings of this case, should Mr. Banks recuse himself? That's a legitimate question. We've also asked about that RCW. This does not seem to apply, we said, to the facts of the case, as Mr. Hazelow was signed into the building and given a pass to observe ballot counting. So explain your use of this felony RCW. We've also asked, is it normal for the elected prosecutor to personally be involved in a case like this one? We also asked him about the email that he sent Mr. Hazelow and Mr. Hazelow's defense attorney, threatening him with a felony charge if he did not plead guilty to the misdemeanor. I asked in the questions, we have shared this email with several former prosecuting attorneys who expressed serious concerns with what appears to be an effort to intimidate Mr. Hazelow into pleading guilty. What do you say to Mr. Hazelow's assertion that this email felt like a threat? We have not, Nicole, correct, at this hour gotten any response yet.
No response yet.
From the Island County prosecuting attorney. At the very least, he needs to tell us why he believes he can seriously prosecute this case given his past comments about Republicans and about President Donald Trump and MAGA Trump supporters. Because that would seem like a clear, clear conflict of interest. And I would also, one more thing I just want to point out. Nicole, can you go back to the Whidbey News Times article that we pulled out earlier? Because there's a little bit of it that makes no sense to me about something this prosecutor said. At the very end of the passage we played for you, when he's defending himself saying, Banks previously ran as a Democrat, but now he's filed as having no party preference, he denies any politically related bias and has repeatedly stressed the importance of ensuring the integrity of an election. Riddle me this. If this case he's bringing, this felony case, for an election observer for not wearing a mask, is about ensuring the integrity of elections, which he wants the news to believe, How does it hurt the integrity of elections if you have someone in there who's not wearing a mask? Is Tim Hazelow accused of doing anything that harms the integrity of the election? So that has nothing to do with this case either. You wanted him to wear a mask years after COVID-19, and he said that he did not believe he should have to wear a mask to engage in the democratic process. So this whole thing stinks to high heaven like lawfare. This prosecutor, at the very least, should recuse himself, and he should be shamed for the email that he sent threatening Mr. Hazelow with a felony charge if he did not simply plead guilty to the misdemeanor. It's a weaponization of the criminal justice system. And this is why, and you want to wonder why Republicans don't trust the judicial system, why they have concerns about lawfare and politically motivated prosecutions. It's because of people like Island County Prosecutor Greg Banks. I hope he does the right thing here, because this is utterly insane. I also want to note, because I don't know about you, I feel so damn bad for Tim Hazelow. Could lose his career over this. His job requires his security clearance. At 57 years old, he could lose his career over this. And so, of course, he's going to fight this absurd felony in court. So he has a Give, Send, Go page where he's trying to raise money to continue to pay his defense attorney. So we'll post a link to that, too. But, you know, I don't often post fundraising pages because then every Tom, Dick, and Harry wants us to post their freaking fundraising page. But I'm making an exception in this case because it's utterly insane. Speaking of utterly insane, we're going to talk about one of Bob Ferguson's top priorities as governor in our segment Unbelievable. First, I have told you guys over and over, take the First Mark challenge. We all need insurance. So why would you not take some simple steps to make sure that you have the right insurance and that you have the best possible price? You might be going it alone and saying, oh, you know, I don't need a middleman. Well, that's what Undivided viewer Eric said. He said he'd been managing his own auto and homeowners policy for decades. And then he's like, well, why not? I'll take the First Mark challenge. Well, they saved him 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowners policy. He said, I'm not exaggerating. I now tell anyone I know who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did, and I'm truly richer for it. Michelle says, just writing to say, keep up the great work. I also want to mention that as of this weekend, we have taken the First Mark challenge. They couldn't save us any money, but hey, great to know that they are for many. We had the best coverage and cost already, and I think that's a good experience too. That's an honest company that says, actually, we can't save you any money. You should stick with the insurance that you have. They didn't try to upsell them or try to sell them insurance they didn't need. So they kind of turned away their business. But at the end of the day, it's an honest company, and you leave knowing that you do have the best insurance and the coverage you need at the best price. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. It's our final live show of the week. So why not a double dose of Unbelievable? Dun, 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 dun. I'm waiting for the spaceship to take me away. Why am I not worthy of abduction? Why don't they want to study me? Is there something wrong with me?
Oh, just give it time.
Okay. I'm okay with it.
You're probably entertaining them.
I don't want to be prodded, but you know, I want to have a chat or whatever. but honestly, I don't know if I need to be abducted by aliens, because I really don't believe it that we're living on planet Earth anymore, because things have gotten so insane. So you remember Bob Ferguson came out and acted like a moderate and gave his first speech to the legislature saying, we're going to speed up the pace of government, and we're going to make sure that we cut red tape and we cut bureaucracy and we make sure that important things and our constituents are served better. Well, he is making good on that promise. I'm so proud of him. I'm so excited about this, because cutting bureaucracy and red tape for people who are out there trying to get permits, trying to build houses, trying to do all these important things in their lives, that's great. Everyone should support this. Well, let's see. What is Bob Ferguson's first big win for cutting government bureaucracy? Ah, here it is. Very proud to announce the Department of Health will now process all requests to change gender designation on birth certificates within 3 business days. Previously, there was as much of a 10-month wait as a 10-month wait. And then he says a team of more than a dozen people worked through the weekend to clear the department's backlog of more than 500 requests. We're speeding up government and centering the people. Think about this for a second. He makes this big deal of, we're going to cut government bureaucracy and red tape for people. We're speeding up government and centering the people. He is literally bragging that a team of government employees worked around the clock over the weekend so that you can more quickly change the gender on your birth certificate. So the obvious criticism is that is your priority. Everything happening in the state of Washington, the homeless crisis, the fentanyl crisis, the crime crisis, and you're bragging about dedicating a team of government workers to work around the clock to clear the backlog of requests from people who want to change the gender on their birth certificate. It is so tone deaf. You could have used that team of people to work around the clock on the weekend trying to get help to people who are living on the streets. You could have used that team of people around the clock over the weekend to try to get help and connect people who are suffering from fentanyl addiction on the streets to services. There are a million ways you could use a team of government workers around the clock to help better the lives of Washingtonians. And instead, you are so proud in virtue signaling that one of your first big actions to cut red tape and bureaucracy is to make it easier for people to change the gender on their birth certificates. You must be kidding me. And they're so proud of it. The Department of Health is the first entity that put this out. We're expediting sex designation change requests on birth certificates. People born in Washington who want to change the sex designation on their birth certificate can do so by filing a request with us. The request will be processed within 3 business days, an expedited rate, plus delivery and mail time. Following the science again, I see. The Washington Department of Health, which has already lost all credibility, clearly has no care to regain it. Because the Department of Health is prioritizing, the thing it is prioritizing right now is expediting requests to change the gender on your birth certificate. And of course, this is all about Donald Trump. This is all about Donald Trump saying in the federal government, there's 2 genders, men and women, and trying to change some of this ridiculousness around boys competing in girls' sports. And so if you go back and now you have, I mean, it's about hiding transgender people, I think. So you go back, it's like, well, let me see your birth certificate. Well, the birth certificate says a woman. I guess it's a woman. It's so truly insane. It's, again, it's not science. I posted this on Instagram and some other places late last night when Bob Ferguson first pushed out there like, yay is me. Oh my God. Some of the comments on his Facebook post just made me depressed because people were cheering him on like, thank you, governor, this is gonna save lives. And I'm like, oh my God, they're crazy. But then I was reading comments from people on Instagram who were talking about all the types of things that they've been waiting months or years for assistance from state government for certain certificates that they need for work. I heard from this dad, he said, yet I'm still waiting for my daughter's birth certificate to have a name spelling error fixed, which he first applied for in May of last year. So the state spelled his daughter's name wrong on her birth certificate. He asked last May for it to be fixed, and he's still waiting for that. But if you want to go back and change your gender, the state will expedite that in 3 days. What did the Department of Health say? Plus delivery and mail time. 3 days, you can do it overnight. All because, oh, Donald Trump, it's so scary. People have to be able to change their gender on their birth certificate or they'll be hunted down as trans people, which isn't happening, of course. Now, he doesn't want them to play in boys and girls athletics if they're boys. So what will this mean? If you go to college, NCAA, and you have a birth certificate that says that you're a girl, what are they going to do then? I mean, I guess you'd have to do some sort of, if there's a question of it, some sort of testing or physical examination of some kind. This is truly insane. Bob has shed all of the fake moderacy because all he's focused on for everything he said during his inaugural address, for everything he said, all he's focused on is the same stuff he focused on for the last 8 years. Which was Donald Trump is horrible. We're going to attack Donald Trump. We're going to push back against everything that Donald Trump is doing. We're going to Trump-proof Washington State. We're going to protect transgender people. And meanwhile, everyone else is like suffering under the weight of high taxes. And this is also what I would say. when he says, we're speeding up government and centering the people. No, you're centering a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction. Tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the people. You're giving them preferential treatment to do something that is out of line with science and that makes no sense. But that's one of the chief frustrations, is all these groups that they say are marginalized, are anything but marginalized in Washington State. Are anything but marginalized. Yet he's showing that they're going to continue to get preferential treatment because they're gender diverse or whatever it is. I don't know when people in Washington State will wake up, but in case you were wondering what steps Bob Ferguson was going to take to cut red tape and government bureaucracy, that's it. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, and now they're attacking our flag. Let's get to it in our second edition of Unbelievable. All right, as if they have nothing better to do in Olympia, this is also a story of priorities. May I introduce you to House Bill 1938, which would seek to change the design of Washington State's flag. Great. Yeah, Democrat-backed bill. And according to them, George Washington just doesn't make sense for our state. Our flag is boring. We don't even have any connection to George anyway. So we gotta redesign this thing. The Washington state flag often faces criticism for its poor design and lack of relevance to the state's identity. The flag features a detailed portrait of George Washington, making it overly complex and difficult to reproduce. Additionally, while George Washington is an important national figure, he has limited historical connection to the state itself. This makes his image less meaningful as a symbol for the state. What? First of all, who thinks it's less meaningful? I just think, oh, we're Washington State. George Washington was an awesome guy. Without him, our country wouldn't be what it is. I'm very proud to be a state named after George Washington. And they just diss the design that it's, oh, it's poor design. And then they say that the portrait of him is too detailed, so it's too complex to reproduce. Have we had trouble reproducing images of the flag or getting new flags ordered or what is it?
I guess if you're in school and trying to just draw the flag, he's a little bit more complicated than like the star for
sure.
Texas.
Yes. One of the reasons why, besides this just being unnecessary and a waste of time after all these years, you know what they'll do to the flag. You know what they'll do to the flag. They'll make it rainbow colors. They'll have some sort of inclusive flag design. It'll have like some transgender flag logo. Or it'll go back to like Native American something. It'll be one of those two things. Remember, what was the state that redid its flag design and it was like very controversial? Was it Idaho? And then Minnesota made it look, theirs look like the Somali flag or something.
Utah, so, Minnesota, and Mississippi.
Yeah, whenever they redesign flags, it never goes well. Now, Mississippi.
Because of the bumblebee beehive thing, remember that?
Yeah, it looks like it ends up looking like a poop emoji. But Mississippi, I think they changed theirs because there was like a Confederate sort of flag issue, right?
Probably.
If that's the case, I understand that one. But there's nothing wrong with the flag of the state of Washington. Now, one thing I'll say, Nicole, I think, was taught something in school that's not true.
I don't know if it's not true.
You guys are going to be the judge because I'm not
legend.
I did not go to school in Washington State. So I didn't take history classes and K-12, whatever it is. So you told me what you learned as to why Washington was named Washington.
Well,
go ahead.
I remember being taught that somewhere in this area, and if it wasn't specifically Olympia, it might have been when it was still the Washington Territory, like Olympia. I believe was like the second D.C. So if something happened and we were attacked in Washington, D.C., when it was just this was all just territory. Right. So when we were if something happened to the Capitol, then they would move west and there was a setup here for government. But I can't find that anywhere.
She told me that this morning. And I'm on the Internet like, OK, like I could maybe believe that. Google. I saw nothing about that. So did anyone else learn that we were named Washington because we were like the second Washington, D.C. in case of an emergency? Or did Nicole's teacher totally make shit up?
Could have.
And fill her head with nonsense. I'm just going to read Matt's super chat now.
Oh, no.
$5 super chat. Our new flag is going to have Jennifer Knight's sparkly dildo on it, isn't it?
Oh.
Yeah. That's one of the first things I thought, actually, is it'll have some sort of sexual something. Maybe they should make our flag a picture of the government tearing a kid away from their parents. That would be an accurate depiction of what Washington State. Or they could have a fentanyl, like a drug needle on it. You know, it can be like red flag with mm-hmm. two drug needles like this.
Freedom.
Freedom. Yes. Don't tread on me. And a person injecting drugs into their veins. Don't tread on me. Or a sex predator, an online sex predator. And it says, don't tread on me. I think all of those are good options. You guys tell me what your ideas are. It's if Washington that. State gets
this
new
might
flag.
Be the first one. Everybody's like, nah, Nicole, you're I don't know. I swear that was taught somewhere. And it might not be why it was named this, but I swear that's a lesson somewhere.
I love your confidence in this. When even after we both spent time on the internet Googling and it didn't come up anywhere.
But how do you search
that, what was the
that,
name
right?
of your history teacher? Should we go back to the Blaine?
Well, remember I mentioned he passed away just a few months ago.
Oh, convenient for him.
Convenient, right?
I'd like to figure out if that was part of the curriculum in the Blaine School District. They're like, I don't know. Just make something up. Make something up.
I found this UW, like the history or the curriculum for PNW history. And so I'm like, what?
Yeah. She's just like, I have to find something that proves this theory. Something. I have to find something. That's good. Okay. Anyway, so that's ridiculous. They're really focused on the important stuff. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Before I talk about Wes Jones, may I?
Oh, please do.
I guess you can put his picture up because people would rather see that than me. It is our friend Wes Jones's birthday today. So he gets the undivided treatment. Nicole, you better chime in. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Wes Jones and Associates. I'm just kidding, just Wes Jones.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Wes. Well, you can give Wes a birthday gift by calling him if you're ready to sell your house. That is a good birthday gift, right? Yeah. Like a lot of people are assuming right now the market is slow. The real issue, though, is the low inventory, not low buyer demand. So homes that do hit the market right now, they're selling really quick due to pent-up buyer demand and limited options. So sellers also, by the way, face less competition right now in the market. So it's an advantageous time to list. So if you're thinking about it, thinking about the timing of it, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, wish him a happy birthday, and then ask him for a free market analysis. He can give you an idea of what the market is doing, how much you might be able to expect to get from your home. So you can do all that. He could talk to you about some of the services they offer, like the Listing Boost Concierge Service, which is a pretty cool one. So sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. I should cut that video for Wes. Okay, let's get to a little bit of national news, shall we? Because everybody wants to hear me sing them happy birthday.
Of course. He's going to make it his new ringtone.
Remember when you used to just be able to pick your ringtone? It would be
you
something just gangster.
You
know what my husband's is? Have you ever heard it?
I'm sure that I have, but no, I don't know.
It's and it's so embarrassing when it goes off in public. It's like geese quacking.
Oh.
Like up in the sky, like you know that. The sound? That's fun. Mm-hmm. And then he makes whenever he hears a goose sound out in the wild, he makes a poof, like a gun sound.
Oh.
Yeah, because he's thinking about shooting them. But okay, anyway,
mine's,
I digress.
Mine's Morgan Wallen. So it is embarrassing when it goes off.
Oh, yeah. Okay, at least one California city has its head on straight. They are voting to criminalize aiding and abetting homeless encampments. So I'm not sure if this is going to go through, but it's an interesting concept. The story is from CNN. It says, in addition to making it illegal to camp on public property, the policy that the Fremont City Council voted 6-1 to adopt also makes it a misdemeanor for residents to aid or abet encampments in a city with about 600 unhoused people. Those who violate the policy, which takes effect in 30 days, could be subject to penalties of up to $1,000 and up to 6 months in jail. How does one aid and abet?
Oh, it was a homeless if you bring them food. If you supply them
with
food, with assistance, anything. Yeah, they are getting serious.
Yeah, well, it says, so there's a Andrea Henson, executive director and legal counsel at Berkeley nonprofit Where Do We Go, says that the language is broad and vague. It can apply to handing out sleeping bags or to social workers. It can also apply to nonprofits, legal organizations, or churches that help the homeless with their survival on the streets. A person who lets a friend camp on their own private property can be cited or arrested. That's interesting. How can they? I don't think they can do that for private property. So that, I don't think that that would hold up in a court of law. Because if you're a church and you want to let homeless people camp in your church parking lot or whatever it is, can you really do anything about that? I'm not sure.
Right. I think this applied to like sidewalks and things like
that. Yeah, because this person's trying to say that if you let your friend camp on your private property, they can be cited or arrested. I don't think that's what we're talking about here. Of course, that's a Berkeley nonprofit legal expert. But yeah, I mean, look, I think the idea is a good one in terms of like, hey, we need to stop making it easy or advantageous in a way to choose our city to be homeless in. And that really does happen in Seattle. The left does not want you to believe that's a thing. They do not want you to believe that people explicitly come to the West Coast because of our very permissive environment for homelessness and substance abuse, etc. 100% they do. And I never got how they could get away with denying that, because when we used to, you know, as I was in news, we go out to homeless camps and talk to people. They'd always say that. They'd always just admit it. Like, oh, there's a lot of services here. Bah, bah, bah. Police don't harass you or whatever it is. So that's absolutely a thing. And so until you get rid of the permissive environment, you're not going to fix the homeless crisis, because you're going to continually have people coming in who want to come here and shoot up drugs and know they're not going to get arrested and there's an availability of it and all of those things. So whether they can get away with criminalizing aiding and abetting homeless encampments, I'm not so sure if it'll stand up in a court of law, but I like the general idea of it. All right, it is Thursday, so we're going to check in with my sister and what's happening in Florida and in the legislative session over there. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, a lot to talk about. So later on today, we know there's been this kind of disagreement among some Republicans in Florida and Ron DeSantis about, he put out this suite of ideas to crack down on immigration. And so he's going to come out later and kind of discuss what the agreement they came to. So maybe we'll talk about that next week. But on the immigration front, so right now under a bill being considered by the Florida legislature, it would make mandatory death sentences for illegal immigrants who are, I mean, convicted of serious crimes, but mandatory death sentences. So what crimes are we talking about?
We're talking about first degree murder and child rape. So definitely two very serious crimes. But as far as I understand it, I think the Supreme Court ruled that mandatory death sentences are non-constitutional.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know like what the difference would be, because Florida also elevated penalties generally for child sex predators who aren't illegal, who are just Florida citizens. And so they already take that crime very, very seriously. So do you need an extra element, like what, just because they're in the country illegally? So I don't see how that would be constitutional, just because I think everybody would have to be treated the same. So I would have to understand what's mandatory for legal Americans who are convicted of those crimes. Because in Florida, they have the death penalty. So if you commit murder in the first degree, like a death sentence is a very real possibility. It's the mandatory element of it that I don't know would be constitutional. So maybe it's just sort of sending a message that, hey, don't come here and don't come here and commit crimes because we'll put you to death. So sort of like just trying to scare them even more away from Florida.
Well, and under this same bill, there's a proposal to make an additional charge if illegal immigrants enter over the age of 18, enter the state of Florida. So on top of already, you know, you're here legally, you have an additional crime just crossing border into our state.
Yeah. So if you're, even if you come there on vacation from another state that thinks it's perfectly fine if you're illegal in this country, like you got an illegal immigrant who enjoys the sanctuary of Seattle and then they go to Florida, like, no, that's a crime to be in Florida as an illegal immigrant. So interesting. Yeah. So that combined with all the other things he wants to do, I don't think you'll have a lot of illegal immigrants choosing Florida as a destination.
I don't think so.
Not at all. So I want to talk to you about voucher programs happening in Florida. So, I mean, I would like to see this in Washington State. I would like there to be more school choice. Our school system is failing. And so if you can take the money that you're already paying into the system and go elsewhere with it, I think that that would be great. There's some controversy over the voucher program happening in Florida right now, because, and explain this to me, there were some changes made to it in 2023 that have resulted essentially in a lot of really wealthy families using it to go to pay for private schools they were already paying for in the first place.
Yeah, so basically they, in 2023, eliminated the income requirements. So previous to this, you had to meet a certain requirement. Your family had to be of a certain like level of income to be able to apply for these vouchers so that you could, you know, essentially afford, make private schooling or school choice more affordable
Or else you were literally just stuck in public schools, even if you did not want to be there.
Absolutely. So in theory, this program is really great. But after removing that, you have tons of families who are of very high income taking advantage of these voucher programs as well. Almost 40% of new vouchers issued in 2023-2024 school year were to high income families who already had students in private schools.
Yeah, so it's like, so they give one example in this story, Margaret Mary Catholic School. So tuition's around $14,000 a year for a K-12 education. So prior to this expansion, only 3% of students there got that financial sort of voucher assistance. And now 98% are using the vouchers at that school. And it's in a very highfalutin neighborhood. So I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, because they still pay into the public school system. And so at the end of the day, like if you're paying, and I'm not sure if it works the same, but like property taxes, for instance, that are going to our public school system, I mean, you should be able to use that money to not to send your kid to public school, even if you are rich. So if you're rich, I guess you just have to suck it up. The idea, people who'd be opposed to this, like you got to suck it up and like, no, you're paying for other people to go to public school. And then you're also paying for your kid to go to private school. I don't know if it bothers me very much.
Yeah, and I think that that exact mentality, that thought process is what went into them eliminating the income level for this program. Because I agree with you. I mean, I feel like the rich kind of take the brunt of a lot of like criticism these days, but wealthy people, like they are, like you said, they're already paying into public school systems. Why shouldn't they be able to take advantage of a program that's put out there to like, you know, allow their kids to go to these private schools with a little bit of help, you know?
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, and I think what's more of a question for Florida is why weren't more of these low income or families with disabled children who it was initially, you know, targeted at pre-2023, why weren't more of them taking advantage of it? You know, this opportunity to get an education in a private school or whatever it is more suited to your child's needs. And so, you know, if that's the idea behind it, trying to figure out why aren't they making that choice if they can. I mean, does the voucher not account for all of the costs associated with that? Are there still barriers for them to send their kid to a private school, or do they just not want to? So it's interesting. But yeah, I don't really have an issue with it. Like, you're spending money on public schools no matter your income bracket, so you should be able to take some of that money and send your kid to a private school.
Yeah, I think it is, like, it still comes down to money. A lot of families, even if 50% or 75% of that tuition is going to be taken care of with a voucher, they still might not even be able to afford that additional percentage of tuition to these schools. So that could also be a reason why you don't see more low-income families taking advantage of these vouchers.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. One more thing. Ron DeSantis thinks that they just need to leave boaters alone in Florida. Is law enforcement unduly harassing boaters who are just out there trying to have a good time?
Yes and no. I mean, we have a big boat culture down here. We have entire Instagram accounts dedicated to videos of people who don't know how to drive a boat driving boats. And so I feel of two ways about this. I do think people should be able to go out and enjoy their day out on the boat without getting stopped for absolutely no reason.
Yeah.
Having officers come onto your boat, give you sobriety tests without any suspicion of you drinking. So I can see how they could maybe take advantage of that and just be out there stopping just anybody. But they do often find people are driving boats under the influence. They find lack of safety, things like, you know, life jackets and stuff not even present on board during these checks. So DeSantis would like to stop these unnecessary stops of boats by allowing compliant boaters to go through these basically classes and get a sticker they can put on their boat that tells police officers, like, this boater, this person that registered this boat is qualified to not be stopped for safety checks.
That's interesting. I don't know. It says DeSantis proposes getting rid of warrantless boater compliance stops. So you can still do it if you have a warrant, but I don't know how they'd, I think that person might be drunk behind the wheel of a boat. I got to go out and get a judge to sign a warrant. That seems like by the time you do that. The only issue I'd have with that is like, you can stop cars on the road if they're doing things that are like suspicious, you know, or if they have an expired tab, you know, and I liken that to maybe people aren't wearing a life jacket or something like that. And then that can lead to other things. So, yeah, I mean, we've all been on a boat. We're like, oh my God, here comes the safety compliance police and everybody's got to stand there and the party stops and they've got to pull out all the stupid, everybody hold a life jacket. So we know we have enough life jackets for everybody on board. And it's like, dude, we're just sitting here anchored. We're fine. So maybe he's just trying to like make it not so annoying, but you still have to have some of that.
Yeah, you do. And I don't know what the line is between, like you said, getting a warrant. Like nobody's going to get a warrant on a Saturday afternoon when everybody's out on the water, you know? So I don't know. I'm not really sure what this is going to, what's going to come of this. I think people are going to love it. And then when you find out there's going to be all these boater accidents or people like not having enough safety equipment on board to survive like a boat crash, God forbid, then maybe they won't like it. I don't know.
We'll see. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
And I can get into some breaking news on that. So there has been a deal reached in Florida on the immigration bill, you know, so a deal to find common ground between what DeSantis wanted and what he felt like was a watered down version of the bill. So the agreement does include new funding for law enforcement to handle immigration, requires any illegal immigrant accused of a felony to be held without bond, makes it a state crime to cross into Florida after illegally crossing a national border, and it does include the mandatory death penalty for undocumented immigrants who commit murder or child rape. I'll be interested to see if that one survives a legal challenge, if anyone wants to challenge over it. And it has a slew of other things. So it seems like at the end of the day, DeSantis basically got what he wanted in a stronger immigration bill. We also have some other news that's breaking. So a judge in Maryland, I believe, has just halted key aspects of President Donald Trump's executive order when it comes to child mutilation, the gender-affirming care, as the left calls it, for children. So I assume this is going to mean that hospitals that had been performing and halted those operations on kids will resume them. We know that was happening at Seattle Children's Hospital, for instance, where as soon as his executive order came out, they were canceling appointments that kids have. In one case, a 16-year-old girl who wanted her breasts cut off. And then there's also on Friday, Washington State and two other Democratic states are hoping a Seattle judge will also halt other aspects of that executive order. So that's not great news. I don't think it's a particular surprise. And we'll have to see how it plays out. But I think it's just horrifying that kids are going to continue to undergo those surgeries while all this plays out in court. So wanted to let you know about those breaking news elements. And with that, let's talk a little bit about our daily show poll, shall we? So I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, should you legally be able to change the gender on your birth certificate? Nicole?
No, it's a historical document.
A historical document.
I understand people can live how they want to live. I don't care. But that's a document that you're supposed to, that's how you're born.
Right.
You can't change how you were born.
I'm going to have to agree with that, obviously. I just want to know, is there any dissent on this? Like any thought that, hey, if you're an adult and you want to live that way, is that fine? Let's see where people are at. 98% saying no. Let me see. And apparently on Patreon, I initially didn't even put out a poll element here. I just put out the question. So thank you guys for working through these difficult times. Douglas says, no offense to anyone, but this is an insanely stupid question. Hey, 2% of respondents didn't think so. Deanna says gender is not changeable. Derek says it's called a birth certificate for a reason. It is the certifiable proof on paper of who and what you are at the time of birth. Nothing can change that. Why does it matter? So you change your adult identity. Who cares? Everyone can clearly see that you've done so. So there's no hiding that. Is anyone asking for your papers? Complete insanity. And I thought it was interesting just to hear people talk about, oh, this is going to save lives. somebody's really going to end their life because they can't change their gender on their birth certificate. Like, that is, that needs and requires some actual serious, and I'm empathetic, but that's clearly a mental health issue and you require some therapy if that is something that, and for people to believe that, I think is just ridiculous. Let's see. Robert says there's no do-overs. Kathleen, you are born with the XX or XY chromosome. That should be reflected on your birth certificate. If you want to change your identity, have surgery, or pump yourself full of hormones, it doesn't change that. So most people saying, no, you shouldn't be able to change the gender on your birth certificate. All right, we'll get to comments in our closing sanity check. It doesn't need to be bleeped out, does it? She doesn't swear in the closing sanity check, does she?
No.
Oh, she's been swearing so much lately that I always just assume she's got curse words in there. All right. I hope you guys caught our first episode of Doge Watch with Zach Abraham, by the way. We had great feedback on it. So I think it's a fun show that we're doing with Zach every week. So we won't be on the regular Thursday show as we had had him on before. But we still like to tell you about Bulwark Capital and the work they're doing to protect retirement portfolios and to protect your dream retirement. Bulwark specializes in managing risk. So that is what Zach Abraham and his analysts spend all their time doing, is look at what's happening globally and try to make sure that they're making changes, that they're managing the risk associated with your retirement investments, which is just part of the game. And it's always smart to get a second opinion. So you get second opinions on all sorts of things, critical health decision, whatever it is. So it's really no different when it comes to the health of your retirement portfolio. So here's what you can do. You can get your second opinion with Bulwark's free Know Your Risk Portfolio Review. You'll get a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. All right, comments. Let's see. This one was from late yesterday. The Reaper's Son with a $5 super chat. WAS local news outlets equals propagandist bullhorns for supporting Democrat interests. King 5 made excuses for Jamie Peterson. Says it all. Yeah, 100%. Captain Cranky Pants, I guess I've committed a hell of a lot of felonies since 2020 because you didn't wear a mask. Yeah, yeah, we could charge everyone with a felony. Tony Martinez, prosecutors overcharging is a real problem. If they're charging as a felony, why didn't they charge that to begin with? It's probably for intimidation and for the prosecutor to get a win. 100%. And prosecutors do that a lot, and I've always been against it, where they threaten you with higher charges, like, oh, we're going to throw the book at you if you don't plead guilty. And I think that's wrong, you know? Like, charge someone with the crime you think they committed, and then go and prove that in a court of law. And so this was clearly, when you read the email, he didn't want us to publish the full email from the Island County Prosecuting Attorney. But when I read it, it clearly comes across as a threat. You charged him with a misdemeanor, and all these months later, because he won't give in, you're going to charge him with a felony. It's just crazy. Baron of Gray Matter, Senate Minority Leader John Braun and eight other Republicans voted to protect illegal aliens on the job from ICE. Yes, heard that correctly. What? Oh, I saw something about this. I'll have to look into it. So there was like a bipartisan vote to protect illegal aliens when they're at their work from ICE. So I got to look into that a little bit. I'll do that and then I'll maybe talk about it on Monday and try to figure out why did Republicans support that. Gary Hartzell, Corn Pop confirmed Nicole's story. Joe said so. Well, apparently, Nicole, you've been very busy over there trying to get to the bottom of this.
Well, because, I mean, I have a couple supporters.
Okay.
That, well, clarifiers, I should say. So Greg over on Facebook and then SGH Surveyor over on YouTube says that Port Angeles was actually the second city and it was named by our second capital city named by Abe Lincoln during the Civil War. So that if anything happened to D.C., it would come over here as a military base. It was all set up. However, I don't think it was really why Washington was named Washington, but it was a thing. And some people are saying, oh, it's a myth. No, it was actually a thing. It's just that the second Washington thing came along later to attract people. But it technically was the second Washington.
Okay, so your story's true. There just maybe isn't a tie to the name of the state.
I still think there's a tie. It was in the same time frame. It was within the same 30 years. So I'm going to say it's a similar, or there's something to do with it, right?
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, I mean, that's good. I'm glad we found something. It's good to know. It's good history.
People are like, it wasn't a dream.
People were just make it up. Corn Pop told us it's true. Christia253, my daughter just had to make a flag for her class and had a pic of the Space Needle with little protesters in tents at the bottom. She's in seventh grade. Wait, so did she make that flag or did they make her that flag?
I think it sounds like the teacher said, you know, you come up with what the flag of Washington should be. And I like
how her daughter was very drug addicts and protesters. Might as well just make the Antifa flag, the flag of Washington State at this point. Rena Capola, how will you get a real ID with a fake birth certificate? Well, the idea being it's not your fake birth certificate because it's actually issued by the state of Washington. It's just interesting because if you have to use your birth gender, which is your gender, that's redundant, birth gender, mm-hmm. it's just your gender, on your passport under Trump.
Right.
I guess
if... I think that that's why they're doing this because I think there's something to matching birth certificate to passport.
Right.
So I think that's why they're doing this, but I'm not
sure. It's got to be for that reason because... I saw like people saying, oh, you'll have to go back to your old gender on your passport or whatever it is. But if, I mean, a birth certificate is one of the documents that is acceptable for you to get a passport. So if you've got your birth certificate and your Washington State issued ID, and they both say that you're a male, even if you're a female, you're going to be able to put male on your passport. Yep.
I don't know why you couldn't.
Because the passport office isn't going to give you a physical exam or be like, are you sure? Like, that just, it's obviously for other reasons than just making people feel good. They're trying to circumvent Donald Trump. Deanna Sanderson, Doge Watch was great. It's fun to hear you two laughing to keep from screaming. Yeah, and there's just endless good clips about Doge. In fact, I think we're going to get to one in our closing sanity check. So good comments per the usual. And, oh, you dropped one more in there.
I was just dropping more.
Oh, that's right.
Whatever.
We'll get to our closing sanity check. All right, the meltdown over Elon Musk and Doge continues, and I think Maxine Waters accidentally admitted why they're so upset about the idea of pulling the curtain back on government spending.
People of this country are being violated because all of our privacy is being taken up by Elon Musk and Trump, and we don't know what all they have on us. We don't know... what all they have on us.
You don't, but we're going to find out under Doge. That has been the sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We've got a powerful story for you coming up on Sundays with subscribers having to do with a local, speaking of this issue, girls basketball player who took a stand and sat on the bench for her final game of the year to protest a biological boy playing on the other team. There's much more to the story as well. She is joining us along with her mother to talk about why she decided to take a stand and what they hope the school district will do moving forward. So we have that coming up. If you want to become a subscriber for just $5 a month, you can sign up at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Okay, bye. Oh, and a new episode of Politics Unpacked tomorrow. So enjoy that.
Dang.
The entire week of the legislative session in a little tiny 10-minute.
And we will be here on Monday, which is a holiday for some people.
What's the holiday?
I believe it's President's Day.
Oh, that's all right. We are going to be here? Yeah, we'll be here.